A friend of ours belongs to a laughter yoga group. I had never heard of such a thing, so I asked her about it. What was her experience like? Well, she explained that laughter contributes to overall health physically as well as spiritually. And there's plenty of scientific evidence to back this up. If, as it has been said, laughter is the sound of joy, that's an obvious connection between that and this Sunday, because this Sunday is Laetare Sunday. Laetare being the first word of the old Latin Mass introit, "Rejoice, O Jerusalem." And the psalm we just sang strikes the same note, the last verse, "Be glad and rejoice in the Lord. Shout for joy." It's an invitation to experience the joy of a renewed relationship with God. Today we come to the midpoint of the Lenten season. Yes, Lent is half over, and for some people that in itself is a cause to rejoice. And in some places, this day is called Refreshment Sunday, and it contains sort of an invitation to lighten up. And in some churches, this is displayed by the wearing of rose-colored vestments instead of the usual Lenten purple. Hence the name Rose Sunday. I remember the first time I went to the Solemn High Mass at the Church of the Advent in Boston. It was a long time ago, during my novitiate. And as the clergy entered, and I looked up from my hymnal, and I saw three guys in pink. And in those days, it was always three guys. And I must admit, I had to sort of stifle a laugh, having never seen rose-colored vestments before. More seriously, this fourth Sunday in Lent is a turning point for us in our Lenten journey. Palm Sunday and Holy Week are just 2 weeks away. And so the focus begins to shift from our inward acts of discipline and devotion to a more outward focus on the saving work of Christ on the cross. I like to think about all of us gathered here on this hill in Hingham as we begin to visualize the hill of Calvary. Today we begin to prepare with joy for the Paschal feast. And the gospel reading comes from the 15th chapter of Luke's gospel, a chapter that we might call Luke's lost and found department. The chapter contains three parables. The first two are omitted from our reading. The first one tells of a lost sheep and a searching shepherd. The second is about the loss of a very precious coin and a woman who turns her entire house upside down until she finds it. And after telling those two parables, the gospel writer concludes, "Such is the joy in heaven over one sinner who repents." The third parable easily the most famous of all the parables Jesus told. And as soon as we hear the words, "There was a man who had two sons," most of us recognize it as the story that has long been named the parable of the prodigal son. Tradition provided the title, because nowhere does Jesus use the word prodigal. And that's because Jesus' story is not really about the wayward son, but about the father. Now, such a familiar story can be quite difficult to hear in any new and meaningful way. It's so familiar. Makes me think of the signboard that was placed outside an antique shop in Plymouth, which read, "Nothing new here." But I asked myself, how might we discover some newness in this old, old familiar story? And one answer comes from the writings of a minister, preacher, pastor named Frederick Buechner. He suggests that all the parables of Jesus can be read as jokes about God, in the sense that what they are about is the outlandishness of God, who does impossible things with impossible people. For Buechner, the story of Jesus is filled with the tragedy of human failure, the comedy of being loved overwhelmingly by God despite that failure, and the fairy tale of transformation through that divine love. So once upon a time, there was a landowner with two sons. And one day, the younger son goes to his father and demands his inheritance right now, so that he can get away from this family, get away from this home, and do his own thing. The father consents. And so the young man goes off and eventually squanders every last penny in dissolute living and is forever labeled as the prodigal son. Hollywood loves reprobates, so of course it's not surprising that this story of this reprobate young man gets all the attention. Then there's the elder son. He stays at home, and he doesn't appear lost at all. But he is as lost as the Pharisees and scribes for whom Jesus told this parable. It's hard to believe, because he is dutiful, trustworthy, responsible. He's probably the one that's kept the farm going as his father aged. Our sympathies may lie with him, especially if you're the firstborn in your family. But when we get to the end of the story, we discover that he too has wandered far off without ever leaving home. As the story reaches its climax, the welcome home party is in full swing. There's music and dancing and feasting, and everyone on the farm seems to be having a great time, except for the older son. Where is he? He's outside, standing in the dark, sulking, warming himself at the fires of his own resentment. Two lost sons. One is vain, selfish, and intemperate. He comes home only when he has no other options. The other brother is self-righteous, smug, and filled with grudges. One commentator says, actually, we should pity the father who has to live with these two brats. And he suggests that it is the father who should run away from home and leave the farm for the two kids to fight it out. But that's not the story Jesus told. The story is about a loving father, a searching, seeking parent. The father reaches out to both of his wayward offspring. You can picture him day after day, looking down the road that leads up to the farm, looking for his younger son, until the day he recognizes a familiar figure with a familiar walk coming up the road. And he doesn't waste a minute. He rushes down the road. He runs down the road and embraces and welcomes home his wayward child. Later on, at the welcome home party, the father notices the absence of his elder son. Leaving the party, he goes out into the darkness to the elder brother and tells him with all his heart how much he is loved and assures him that everything that he has belongs to him as well. To children, both are loved, both are welcomed, both cherished unconditionally. So who is the real prodigal in this parable? It's the father who pours out lavish, extravagant, and abundant mercy and love on each of his wayward children. The one whose love is beyond all calculation of right and wrong does not wait for the recital of sin, but offers forgiveness and love first. And it is confidence in such a tremendous love that always brings the wayward and the wandering home. To be sure, this parable has always spoken to the destitute and despairing among us, and to those who proudly claim, I have never disobeyed any commands. But it also has a powerful message for all of us who find ourselves somewhere in between these two extremes. So what happens after the party, the day after? There's no conclusion. Jesus doesn't finish the story because Jesus invites us to finish the story in terms of our own lives. Whether you have wasted opportunity after opportunity in your life, or labored devotedly, but perhaps resentfully, because everybody takes you for granted, God loves you. Whether your trust in God is lifelong, fainting, faltering, or maybe just beginning, God's desire is to be in relationship with you, for God is madly in love with humankind. And love like this is so foolish, so prodigal, that it goes all the way to the cross to show how far God will go to tell us how immensely we are loved. And there's something about love like this, you know. it doesn't die. It endures suffering to the point of death. But love like this never ends. It is raised into new life, everlasting life, where the heavens ring with laughter at the homecoming of each and every beloved child of God.